The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.
I'm going to take you on a journey now. And it come about through lockdown, really. Brandall Golf Course. We walked over the Wolverhampton Road, come down to the golf course, which is a bit dilapidated. And we got on really across the brook that runs round by the caves, by the Fuss Tee. And it brung back a lot of memories. I mean, we walked round it. And it was pleasant enough, it was overgrown. And the thing is with Brandall Golf Course, it's just been closed down, really. And the development on the hostel were there when I were a kid. And the golf course was, you'd see them all going round on a Sunday morning at about 6 o'clock to book in on the Fuss Tee. And it brought an adventure back. So really, going on this trek around the golf course, which sort of runs right round the top of the estate, Ferndale Road to Grafton Road. Then it turns itself on and goes across towards Airscreen, backs upon itself, comes back across the back of Brandall, then down along Brandall Road to hit the Wolverhampton Road, and then round again, round the back of the flats and the houses, the big houses on the Wolverhampton Road. And then back down to the clubhouse. Well, what I thought I'd do is there's various things connected with Brandall Golf Course that might be of interest in terms of not the walking round, but the memories really that it had. And I suppose the Fuston is directly resulting from just saying what I said. The golfers had started to come. It had up and about 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, and the golfers had started to come from all over the shop, really. I think it was council owned, the golf course was. So they come from all over the shop. Anyway, it had a good reputation. Stephen Carpenter, who lived on the estate, it was Oakdale Road, and his brothers. Well, Stephen Carpenter did become a golf professional there. He was the one who gave you lessons and stuff. And he were always walking round from Oakdale Road round to the golf. You know, like we're going to the factories like all the other blokes. But he'd have his, like, them pullovers that pull up under your chin. He'd have them on a light, and then have a jumper on with crisscrosses in bright colours slacks, and his golfing shoes and his clubs, and he'd go round to work every day. Which was a bit weird, really, for somebody who come off a council estate. Any road up. The first memory, really, is to do with them golfers, because we'd be up early on a Sunday morning, and we'd go round Ferndale Road, and there was about halfway round the back, there was some swings we used to play quite a lot, really. What we used to do is we'd slowly brick hole in the fence so we could get through, and we'd done our business. I tell you, we always used to recce if we did summit, and we'd done our business, and we realised that when they were up on the Fuss Tee, which was way back just to the back of the clubhouse, and it was right upon the top of the bunk, when they drove that ball, it come up on the ridge on the Fuss Fairway about 50 yard a foa where the swings was, and then it'd bounce a couple of times and settle round about, if it was a good drive, round about where the swings were. Now, they couldn't see us. We couldn't see them, but we knowed it ticked them about 10 minutes to get pack up, you know, take the tea up, walk down the hill, walk down the side and the bank, come along the deep sort of valley path, climb up the bank and come onto the fairway where we would be. So what we used to do, they used to play in fours really, more often than not. So we'd wait, first ball, boing, 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 settle it in. Second ball, boing, 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 boing. So there were, until there were foul balls there. And then what we would do is there'd be two lookers and two runners. So the two lookers would get on the top of the swings. You'd have to climb up the bars of the swings, sit on the top, and then you could see over the top of the trees and see down into the valley. So you could watch the golfers are coming. And then the t'other two would go out on the fairway, fun where the golf balls was. We'd aim pinch forward because that'd be weird, wouldn't it? But we'd probably naff one or two. And then the golfers would come, where's my ball, here it is. Oh, hear me. And then one of them or two of them would say, cool, fun, man, at all. I must have drove it into the rough. And there was a lot of rough and like bracken and stuff all around. And after 5 minutes, they used to, what they call a drop another ball, which is a shot, and then just drive on. And then in our pockets, you'd have one or two golf balls. Well, if you did that till about six, till about, what would you say? I don't know, 11, maybe half 11. You'd know by the time they'd done their full round, you know, you could get down to the clubhouse. So we'd go through this sort of this series of events quite a few times and we'd end up maybe with a dozen golf balls, most of them brand new. Some of them a bit chipped, but most of them brand new. And then all we'd do then is go down to the golf club and we'd wait there. And as they come out to the cars, ready to put the proper shoes on, the driving shoes on, you just say, hey, mate, you want any golf balls, Chip? And they go, well, what you got? And you get like a sack, Aiden sack. And you'd say, well, we've got a few in here. We just fun them in the brook or we fun them in the, you know, in the trees and stuff like that. And they have a look, look. And they call it, you know, them all, whatever, Dunlop or something. So they don't know unless they've secretly marked them which one would be theirs. But sometimes they'd suspect it and they go, oh, brand new, these are good ones. How much do you want for them? Well, they might be, I can't be sure, they might have been half a crown for one golf ball. And you'd say, well, shilling H, or you can have five for half a crown, which was like 2 and 6, so that was two and a half shilling. And they'd go, phew, that's a bit too much. You go, well, yeah, well, get them chipping then that anyway, will you? And they'd say, phew, you lot know how to do business, do you? And go, well, are we done? And you'd be there. And you'd usually get rid of what you got, really. And they'd think they'd got a bargain, but they was probably bringing their old golf balls back. And we had 2 and 6, sometimes 5 bob. And then we'd go to the outdoor, Mr. Granger's, and we'd get some crisps and some pop and some suck. And then we'd sit on the wall and have a great time. And then the next week, I mean, there was a couple of times where you had to be careful because the parkie was going about with his whammo. So you had to be careful then what you were doing. And there was a couple of times where, you know, folks were, I give you no money for thee, you bloody naff these and blah, 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 and you tried to get out and but really they sussed what you was doing. They don't know how you did it, but they sussed what you were doing and they wouldn't bring the balls off you. So some Sundays you might have, you know, a bit of a rubbishy time and you might hang on to like 6 of the golf balls, you only sold 3 or 4. But in the end you'd sell them and it was a good little number, that was, a good little number. And and you try to get folks and all to infiltrate your spot because, it, you know, the other lads that lived in Grafton Road or Ferndale Road or Fairway Road, they thought, oh, that's a good way of making some money. We'll try that. So you'd always got to be there, up, early, be there for 6 and get, you know. And your mother and your dad used to tell your mother and her father, they go, how come you can't get up for school, but on Sunday you get up for six? Ah, well, we're climbing, or we're doing this, or we're doing that. And they never really suspected what we did. So, I mean, that was the first memory, really, that come back to me when we started walking around Brandall. And the second one was, again, near to where the swings were, if you walked through the gap where we got up and walked across the first fairway, you then hit what was called the ninth green. And then all around the green were these things called bunkers, and they were like deep troughs full of sand. And right by the side on the ninth green was this big, big oak tree. It must have been 400 foot high, something like that. Well, it was 400, but it did, it seemed it. And there was three things really about this. One, that oak was part of the test that you had to do if you wanted to get in the Dales. Now, the Dales was our, like, gang, for want of a better word, up the close. But your day, you know, your day, well, I've just said your day pinch anything, but we pinch the golf balls, don't we? But your day do anything really wrong as such, and your day damage anybody's property, your day carry knives. You sometimes got in a ruck with sort of a gang from Brandall or a gang. But you're like kept together. It was more like a communal gang. It was a lot like mates just getting on with stuff. And what you had to do is, say the eldest in the gang would be 10, you know, Skitty or Abigan or Reggie or somebody like that. Well, you'd have various tests. I'll have to do something about the Dales one of the days, but I ain't going to tell you all the testing. But this was the tree, and you had to climb to the top of the branches, and your mates would be down the bottom and they'd watch that you go up. Well, the first 12 foot, it was just like the trunk of the tree with little twigs that hung out and stuff like that. And that was the wussiest part, because if you fell off, you could break a leg or break an arm or something. So that was probably the most dangerous thing. Once you got to the first big branches, then you could start working it. And then the only fear would really be, A, if you fell, and B, how high it was. And then as you got to the, obviously you got near the top, the branches got thinner and thinner and thinner. And even if there was only a breeze, the tree would be going backward and a forward and a backward and a forward and a back. So you'd be swaying all over the place. But you had to get high enough so you could poke your head out the top and wave to your mates down the bottom. And then that was one of the tests that finished you. And that was great. And you come back down. And, you know, you had to do these other tests to get in the Dales, but that oak tree, and it's still there. So when we went walking, the oak tree was still there. And I just remember being a kid and the pure joy of getting that eye. It was absolutely busting. And then the other thing we used to do on the ninth green, and sometimes we did get chased off. We did get chased off by the parkie or whatever, the groundsman or the greensman, whatever they called him, because he had a whammer and he'd see you. And then you'd hear him shout, get off the bloody green! And you'd shout at him and something and run off. He'd never catch you. And he's wambled. I don't think he knew how to run. He just used to plod by the side of him. But we'd use these big bunkers for like Olympic game long jumps. Because it was great. Because you could lump yourself along the green and then launch in the air. And you'd go blooming high. And then you'd just hit the sand. And we'd play for hours long jumping, you know, from one end of the t'other, one end of the t'other, mark it, get back, sealed one, do it again. And probably all day, because if you did see the parkie, you'd just either climb up the out tree or you'd hide behind it and he'd just pass you by just doing his rounds and stuff like that. So that, you know, that was another fantastic memory. And I stopped for ages on the ninth green and just looked at this tree and thought, well, hang on a minute. You know, I climbed you 65 years ago and I'm still here. And them greens, I jumped in you on that sun 65 years ago and I'm still there. I mean, how amazing is that? Absolutely amazing. And then the final thing, after you come round all the back, you'd been all round like S Greenway and come up the back there. We don't used to really truck that way very much because it wasn't that productive. A green's a green, eh? A bunker's a bunker, a tree's a tree, except these were special to we, really, really special to we. But as we'd finished, right the back of the golf course and going along the Wolverhampton Road, our side, and then the hostel was there, there were no houses or anything there then, was these posh houses, the big posh houses. That's where we did all our scrumping. Well, most on with scrumping. And scrumping was another like military manoeuvre, because you had to know how to scrump, I tell you. And you had lookers, raiders, catchers, every sort of thing you could think of. And you'd do your recces. You'd do loads and loads and loads of recces. So you go to a house that might have Golden Delicious or something like that. Or you'd have Cox's, or you'd have Worcester's, or you'd have Red's. And you'd think, we'll have them. So you had fun art, what they got at the bottom of the garden. If it was a wall, you wore much good getting in there. But if they got pilings, over the wicks, you decide which one you was going to eat. And over the wicks, two or three of you, probably the bigger ones, they'd come and you'd gently move a couple of the pilings. So they looked as though they was fixed, but they wore. Then the day, and then you'd spend about a week watching. You had fun at if the bloke went to work, the wench went to work, what time they was home, what the routine was, what time they had the tie, what time they watched the telly, was the telly in the back room or the front room, everything like that. So you know exactly what they were doing. And then you choose your time, either they was out or they'd be in the front room watching the telly, and then you'd start. So you'd put your watchers on the pilings, and then you'd put your runners just inside, and then you'd get your raiders and your catchers and go to the tree. So you'd usually have about eight on you altogether, I would think. Probably eight. If it was a big orchardy type thing, you'd have more and you'd just be off all over the shop. But your raiders would be the best climbers, the quickest and the best and the most nimble. So they might be the babs, really. They might be the 5 and 6 year olds that can scrat up, you know, and get down quick. And if they had got a jump, then you could catch them because they wore that heavy. The runners would be your fastest runners. The watchers really was the ones that was, you know, you wanted to be on the ball because they got to watch everything that was going on. And then you'd have the ones beyond to let everybody out, like at the end. So you'd... You'd all go in the inside of the fence by the ones that was watching the fence, and then the watchers would get probably one end of the pilings and the one the other end, so they'd both got different views of the back doer. If there was an entry doer, if there was a patio, you'd watch the patio, or else the windows upstairs and downstairs, because you never know, you might be halfway up a tree and somebody goes in the bedroom and goes, oh, what's that outside there? Somebody's in the blooming apple tree. And then the raiders and the climbers, the raiders and the catchers would go up to the tree and you'd wait there. You wouldn't just go like a bullet to gate. You'd wait there, make sure everything was calm of how you carried on. And then the raiders, the climbers would be up the tree. And then what they'd do is, see, you know how to get opples off. You, when you get an opple off, you don't just yank the bloody thing off now. Because that sort of shakes the tree and it makes a noise and it also knocks some of the other apples off. Now you just hold it in your one hand and then you just turn it lightly so it just almost like screws it off. And then down at the bottom, you just strapped it down. The catchers would catch it on the jumper, hold the jumper out, catch it on the jumper. And slowly you'd work round the tree for as long as you know, if you were challenged or anything, you'd be there until you got a boatload of stuff. Because then the catchers could go and take it to them out the pilings. They could fill the jumpers. and you'd go back for a second amount. If it looked as though there were light stuff going on or there was movement in the settle, the house, then you'd have to be a bit more careful then. And then you'd have to make sure you're always sharpish. So you'd go through this military manoeuvre and just spend as much time as you possibly can. Your watchers would whistle if something was going on and you're quieting down. Them at the pilings would just keep checking to make sure everything was all right. Now and again, you had a rook and somebody come out to hang the washing out or something like that and you was all deathly still, or you belted it and they chased you but they couldn't get you. No chance. We never, ever, not once did we get caught when we was crumping, I'll tell you that. And then once you're done and everything was finished, you went out, you sat in the hostel and you see how much you'd got and all that. And away you went. And I can honestly say that was the only time we'd get louts by our mother. Because what I used to do, I'd say, where you been? And we go, oh, we've been scrumping, mother. And I'd go, let's see what you got then. And they'd be like, whatever it was. There might be Coxies or Worcesters or Golden Delicious. You did bring cookers home sometimes, but I don't mind what it was. And then he'd get you to pile them. I'd get you to pile them and you'd eat the skins while you were piling them. And then I'd make apple pies for everybody in the close. So that's why we'd get a belting, really. It was like a bit like Robin Hood, you know, robbing the rich to feed the poor. And all the neighbours could smell it. I'd leave the windows on, you could smell these apple pies. And I'll tell you what, you don't taste apple pies like my mother's apple pies. Absolutely fantastic. So everybody that night, I'd have apple pie for a pudding because your dad usually have enough money to have a pudding. And that was, you know, that was a great, great, that was a fantastic memory. I just absolutely love that memory. So it's strange, really, when you return, like that day, return to Brandall Golf Course. It was in disarray. It was overgrown. It was ready to be closed because they're going to build houses on it and a school and stuff like that. But it meant so much to us off that estate as kids. We spent hours and hours and hours on there, mainly on our side, not on the Brandall side. But if we wanted an adventure, we might walk over to the Brandall side to see what it was like, because that was as far as you'd go. It wore no more than half a mile, but that was as far as you'd go. And then when you think you had so much fun out of nothing, you know, and made some money, you know, we naffed them golf balls. We had a laugh. We filled our bellies with crisps and suck and dandelion and burdock pop. We had the Olympic Games. You know, we won gold medals on the ninth green. How fantastic is that? We climbed trees that was, realistically, 40 foot high. And yeah, I was like 6 year old. And that made us part of Summit. That made us part of the Dales. You know, we was in a gang, for want of a better word, but it wore a gang. We were in a group of lads that would die for one another. And then to cap it all, we had fun. You know, we filled bellies with apples that my mother made apple pie from. We naffed some of the stuff from the rich folks on the Wolverhampton Road, and they probably knowed about it, but they couldn't be bothered. And had a lovely, absolutely busting childhood doing that. And what better can there be than that? What better can there be than having a fantastic childhood? So, you know, that's just a few stories about me growing up, doing a walk in a place, Brandall Golf Course, and telling you a lot about it.
The undiscovered black country, the folks don't seem to know. The undiscovered black country, where everyone should go. People walk or cycle round, they pass the time of day. The undiscovered black country has places tucked away.